Because we were first one to do this, we were able to clock in 30 crores in revenue in just, I think, 60 days.
Wow,
And that
that's
was
really
at a new
significant.
product. Got into IIT, got a job at Microsoft, started working in the US, and then started driving his dream car, Ford Mustang. Life sorted, right? Nahi. He left all of that to come back to India and started selling college after college, college after college, with 45 degree heat on his bike. Left all that comfortable life to do this. And then realized that uska product bik hi nahi raha. From there on to now, build a unicorn. A unicorn which is incredibly successful in this country and is killing it. Razorpay. We're talking about founder of Razorpay, Shashank Kumar, and his story. How did he build all of this? क्योंकि ये तो सब बोलते हैं कि पहले मैं ऐसा था और अब ये हो गया. What was the journey? What were the initial steps which helped him make a behemoth which he has built? And how he can help young entrepreneurs like you and me build a behemoth like this? We've talked about all of this, about his journey, what people can learn, what are the mistakes he made, what are the key essential things every startup founder should keep in mind, what are the initial steps which we should take, how to find the startup idea, how to validate this startup idea, and how to grow week on week, every week, till the time you become unicorn, and even after that. And today, even after achieving all that success, all the work which he's doing to empower people like you and me by having an incubator inside his organization where he's going to help more than 5 lakh young entrepreneurs build a really large organization and business. Do you want this? If yes, watch this episode till the end because this episode's going to blow your mind.
Also, this podcast is brought to you by CoinSwitch Kuber. CoinSwitch Kuber is India's simplest digital exchange and trading platform for cryptocurrencies, where you can start trading from only rupees 100. A simple, fast, safe and secure platform, which allows you to start your crypto journey in the most user-friendly way.
First, you come out of IIT. Then you have built a startup in a completely new space, which is not there in India. Then you have made it a unicorn. Now you have become an angel. So you are like a proper startup story in India.
Wow.
So I want to do this for everybody who's watching for the first time, let's say.
Okay.
And they have heard this word called startup. And they want to start it out. And they have these dreams of, I want to become someone, I want to start of my own. So this podcast is going to act for them as a guide, like 101 to startup. Shashank's take on it.
Okay.
Can we do this?
Perfect. Sure.
All right. So before we go into that, I want you to tell for that 0.01% people who don't know what Razorpay is or who you are, can you tell them quickly in 60 seconds, what is Razorpay and what do you do at Razorpay?
Razorpay is providing payments and banking solutions to businesses in the country. So the simple goal for us is like, you know, helping businesses digitize, right? Supporting them in their financial journey, in their growth journey. And today, you know, right from incorporation to providing payment solutions to helping them with their payroll, taxation, vendor payments, getting them their credit, corporate card, helping them connect to investors. We do a whole bunch of activities, you know, and the simple aim is that, you know, any point, any business which is looking to grow, you know, digitally, we should be able to support them through various ways.
I'll tell you, I'll make it easy for everyone, okay? in a much easier, my version of it, like a total... So I found out Razorpay when pandemic just hit. It was, okay. I think, March, okay. April. And I had run a completely offline business. There are so many distributors. There are 30,000 retail points we are looking out. And now everything's shut. We have a 21-day lockdown. Now, what do I do?
That must be awful.
That was horrible, okay? And there are 400 people team who I have to give salaries. And this is like a personal rule that I'm not going to cut down anything. It was just bad scene. So I thought, why not I do online business? Okay, because obviously there are people who are killing it online, D2C. Yeah, yeah. Let me do it.
Is that when you started on Instagram?
Yeah, kind of.
Okay.
I was on Instagram before also, but when I started like creating content regularly because I was looking for alternative options. Yeah, like maybe.
Yeah, of course.
I found out Razorpay and I built a store on Shopify. I built my Razorpay account. Everything was up and running in 48 hours.
Wow.
And then my payments were getting collected. Everything was happening. I was able to find out kisne pay kiya, kisne nahi kiya. And for me, it was At that time, I didn't know anything about it. And then all of a sudden, 7 days into it, I'm guiding my other friends. Oh, you know what? I'll help you out.
Amazing.
So, <Yeah. laughs> that is what Razorpay did to me. It helped me build my online store. And we're grateful because your team, and I'm not making this shit up, okay? Your team helped us within like in 7 days, we were able to run everything quickly. In fact, 7 days, I'm taking too long. It was like 2 to 3 days where we was up and running. GSTs was registered. Everything was there.
Oh, nice. Really
and
nice.
Because we were first one to do this, we were able to clock in 30 crores in revenue in just, I think, 60 days.
Wow. That was really
at a new product.
That's really significant.
So that was really good. And that's how I found Razorpay.
No, that story relates really well. But, you know, when pandemic hit, like, there were many people who wanted to move online, right? So I think we were very focused that, okay, anyone who's looking to move online, like, you know, how can we support them? How can we enable them, right? And that's panned out really well. So, you know, I think one thing that has happened in last, you know, 1.5 years is there's been such a huge surge of, you know, SMEs and businesses coming online, right? And trying to make internet work for them. I think just for growth of India, you know, just to grow the growth of the ecosystem, I think people figuring out internet and technology and, you know, figuring out distribution over internet is just perfect. It's just what, you know, this generation should like really, you know, jumpstart on, right? Like, I think for our parents and others, like, you know, it was mostly like, okay, I have to get a job in banking or government or stuff like that, right? Even 10 years back, it was more like, okay, like, you know, I have to become engineer, doctor, that, and still people do, but, you know, hopefully, like through this thing, like, people should see, right? Like, there's a lot more opportunity present, yep, right? And you can go through a lot of unconventional paths as well.
Yes, that is. So, unconventional part, we go right back to basics, okay? What is the first thing? Like, now, everybody who wants to become the part of growing India and wants to contribute to the growth of India right now, what should be the first step they should take?
What it boils down to is that, you know, I want to solve a problem, right, that I'm really passionate about, right? And that's something that, you know, I can't do in the current setup or in the current way. And you know, you really think like, okay, like, you know, starting up in that place will enable you to scale it, right? Or will enable you to solve that problem really, really well, you know? Because at the end of the day, like, you know, all the glamour aside, like, I mean, entrepreneurship is really, really, really hard, right? And we have a lot of success stories. We cover so many success stories. We don't cover the failure stories, right? So everyone sees the top 1% people probably and don't see the other 99, right? But it's still a very fulfilling thing to do. But it will only work out if, you know, if you kind of want to know, you know, that, okay, like, I want to solve this, right? I want to work on this. And that's what it's all about, right? Like, you know, so when I started, right, I mean, we didn't think like, okay, like, we are building a startup or something, right? Like, you know, we want to do something. But me and my co-founder, so, you know, I was doing my job in Microsoft at that point of time, you know, and my co-founder was in Schlumberger. And we're like bored in our jobs. You know, I was really bored in my job. Like, you know, it was fine. It's a great job. Microsoft is a great company, no doubt, right? And so it was a challenging job as well. You know, had a great life. Great life in US. You know, I used to drive a Ford Mustang or something. I used to travel a lot. You know, it's all good. But I didn't have professional satisfaction. I didn't feel like I am doing something meaningful with my life, with the amazing education that I've got, right? And so me and Harshal, we know each other since college. We started doing a side project, which was, you know, very simple. We wanted to build like a sort of a platform which will enable donation culture in the country, in India. So, you know, kind of feel like people in our generation in white collar jobs in cities like Bangalore and Delhi, we don't believe in donating anything, or we don't donate anything. There's no culture around that. Like, you know, for our parents, people in tier 3, tier 4 cities, do you think of, okay, I should donate something to the temples, give alms and all, right? So like, okay, how do I, you know, enable that? Like, what is like a digital version of, you know, that old culture around congregating around temples and donating to people as there, right? You know, so we wanted to build something around that.
Okay.
And when we did that, you know, we discovered as part of that, like, we wanted to accept payments, right? And this was 2014, 13, 14. So this was at a time when, you know, obviously Flipkart and all, you know, had become slightly big, but it was still at a time where startup ecosystem was just taking off. So when we tried to accept payments, you know, and work with the incumbents or the existing providers still there, we encountered a lot of problems, you know. Things like, hey, are you a profitable business? Or do you have a physical office space, right? Or, you know, what is, like, you know, can you give a fixed deposit, security deposit, and stuff like that, right? So it was such a painful experience, right? And we were like, boss, like, you know, it's just payments, right? It's just a simple problem. Like, you know, you are accepting money. That's it. You know, why do you need to ask so many questions? Why do you need so many details, right? Because startups coming up, businesses coming up, right? They don't have those things, right?
Yeah.
They would want to start up as soon as possible, accept payments, and just start running online, right? And when we check out the reviews and everything, it was a very, very negative experience, right? And we felt like, okay, we can do something about it. We can solve for this. And it appealed to me, you know, because the problem statement appealed to me because, you know, I have an engineering background. My co-founder has an engineering background, and payments by its nature is a very technical problem, yeah. You know, because in the end, it's like, you know, moving bits, moving money, stuff like that. Right. So we thought, like, you know, the people who are probably running payment companies, they are mostly from sales background, right? Because they want to sell. Right?
Yeah.
But we are like, you know, you have mobile, you have internet, right? I mean, that's it. Like, you know, you should do everything digitally. You should accept payments digitally. You should make like a kick-ass experience on mobile. You should allow people to go live within minutes, right? And start accepting payments. Like, that's just what we wanted to do. And we felt like, you know, that's something that we can do, right? And this is an opportunity to do that. And we were really passionate about that problem statement. So coming back to what you asked, you know, like, what is step one? Step one is just not thinking about, like, I want to do a startup. Step one is, you know, finding a problem that, you know, that you really think you can dedicate like years of your life to, right? That you feel like, okay, this is something that, you know, it can be something good. And just like, you know, you did, right? You know, you just went online, put something up and started doing it, right? I don't think you ever thought like, okay, like, you know, I want to build like a large company, right? Like, no. You know, let's just start, right? Let's just do something. Let's just put it out, right? And see what is happening. And, you know, that's how, like, the journey should usually be.
The first thing is, wherever you are, you find out what is your problem. And you then try to find out, is there a solution for it or no? And if there's not, and then you still feel, okay, ye problem is not helping me sleep properly. Yeah. Let me go figure out how to make this, how to solve this for a large number of people, right?
Yeah.
I did this in the second life. I mean, I call it second life because my content creation journey and all of this, I called my second life. So this was, I was in peak pandemic, okay, again. Before pandemic, actually. And I was doing my business. And at the same time, I used to speak and I was going to United Nations to represent India, doing all of this. And I used to speak and I wanted somebody to record all those speeches and put it on social media so that which can handle my personal brand across platforms. Okay. And I thought there's no one who's helping me out. Like, I only have to get my videos done. I only have to get the editing done. I only have to think about the scripts or the next thing which I have to do. I only have to think about distribution. I only have to think about engagement. I mean, sab mujhe hi karna hai. So I thought this is a problem. And I started trying to find agencies. Like, is there somebody which can help me build my personal brand online without me paying much attention onto it? Because if I'll pay much attention here, I won't be able to build a business.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was a problem which I felt. And while there was pandemic, I thought, okay, let me do it for myself. Once I started doing for myself, I started doing for my friends, then other friends, and that I never knew that this would become like an agency. So it turned out to be like a business, which I still don't call it a startup or something, but it's just going on at the side. There was a problem which I thought is a problem for me, started solving for me. Because this is what we promise, right? As an entrepreneur, I'm sure if I tell you that, okay, you have to give 5 hours in a day or 10 hours in a day to content creation journey, you're like, fuck off. You're like, bhai, nahi ho payega.
Yeah.
Like, you do it.
Massive.
That's massive. I don't want to do it, right? But that's the amount of hours a content creator are putting. So we go to entrepreneurs and we're like, all you have to do is give us 1 hour in a week. And then the entire week, your audience is going to think that you're putting 5 hours in a day.
Wow. Okay.
So now, and that kicked. So that problem really, like, a lot of entrepreneurs who wanted to build their brand, who wanted to put their message out as an individual as well. They related to that particular problem. And then our startup also kicked off.
Nice.
So that's now the step one, finding a problem. What's the step two? Mil gayi problem, ab kya karna? What do we do about it?
It's a lot of steps, experimentation steps in that sense, right? Like, you know, when you think like, okay, I want to solve for this, right?
Okay.
I think the next step is just, you know, trying to understand what is out there, right? Like, what are the current solutions, right? What are the
market study
markets looks like, right? And it doesn't need to be very exhaustive. You know, okay. You know, you're going and talking to thousands of people may not be, right? Whoever you can access in your network, right? I mean, people around you, your friends. But usually, like, I think the filter you like to apply is like people who probably be honest with you. Because, you know, if you go and talk to your cousins and all, you know, people who usually be encouraging or otherwise very discouraging. Both the sets don't work out, right? Either they will say, ki tumhara dimag kharab ho gaya, right? Like, kya, kaun karega ye, kaun lega ye, right? Or otherwise, people are like, arey, sab chalega, right? Matlab, you know, I'll sign up for it. You do it. You know, you have my support. Right? Both the sets don't work out.
They both are toxic. Yeah. Stay away.
So you know, talk to people who would be honest to you, right? It could be, you know, your colleagues or, you know, it could be just your acquaintances who would give time to you that are there. People who can be sounding board. Or otherwise, people, you know, whom you think like the problem will affect, right? Like for us, when we are thinking about payments, right? I mean, we talk to other entrepreneurs, right? Small entrepreneurs, people who are, you know, just like 2-3 people company, people who want to accept payments digitally or just looking to start up. And they're like, boss, this, I don't know what this means, right?
Yeah.
I don't understand payments, right? It just sounds complex, you know. Oh, maine physical documents, legal agreement signed karke bhej diya hai, aadha padha bhi nahi hai. Like, okay, like, you know, even back then, 2014, 15, like, why do you need to sign physical documents, right? I mean, I don't know. I mean, yeah. Nobody knows. And we literally, you know, try to ask other people, why do you need to sign physical documents? Like, you know, is it written somewhere? Is it mandated somewhere? And like, nobody knows. Nobody knows why you need to. Like, you know, it's actually not written somewhere. Eventually, you figure out it's because that's how things work. I mean, that's how things have been, yeah. Right? Nobody questioned it like, okay, like, you know, do we really need legal agreements here? You know, that's how people open bank accounts. So that's what it sort of, you know, became.
It
And we're like, okay, let's change it. Like, why it needs to be like that, right? And that's what, you know, the first thing was.
That was the first step.
Yeah, that was the first you know, this thing that, okay, like, you know, there is a real problem here, right? This
yeah.
is, and we can do things which
why
are...
Why do people need to sign 10 documents?
Yeah, why do people physically need to sign 10 documents? Why is the payment on mobile not smooth? Like, this was in 2G days, right?
Yeah,
so 2G payments can fail. And we would go back and question, see, it's technology, right? I mean, if network breaks and network comes back, payment should still go through, right? So just doing that study, just understanding the pain points, just understanding what you can bring to the table, at least knowing like, okay, what my next three steps are, you know, it doesn't need to be very complicated, but, you know, knowing what my three steps are and at some point figuring out like, okay, am I ready to commit to this? Because I think that thing is important, right? As a step two or a step three that, yeah, like, you know, I know I have a semblance of what the problem is, what the market is. And now I'm ready to, you know, commit to solving this in some ways.
Right? Okay, let's make it more structured, okay? What are the essential questions which somebody needs to answer as a step two? Let's say you said, number one is, you need to answer, okay, is this problem for a lot of people as well?
Yeah.
So you find out that.
Yeah.
Then you find out what's the market size and who are the existing customer competitors in it. That's number two.
I wouldn't worry so much about market size, to be honest, you know, because it's not usually clear what the market size is.
Okay.
In some cases, you might, you know, like I think in case of payments, for example, I think it's visible. But if you think of a lot of new things, right, like food delivery or otherwise take something like Google when it started, you know.
There was no market.
There was no market at that point of time, right? So I think it's fine. Like, you know, good entrepreneurs, good people over time figure out how to navigate these kind of things, right? I think what you're looking to answer is like, you know, is there a future where this can be big?
Yeah.
Right? Is there a future where you can imagine like everyone doing things a certain way, a new way, right? Like for us, you know, obviously for payments, it was very obvious, you know, because payments itself is such a huge legacy market, right? But the answer that we wanted to, you know, get to was, is there a future where everyone is paying online? You know, and that was clearly the case,
yeah.
Right? Because there are like, you know, few million customers who are paying online and it's going to be a billion, right? Yeah. So, and similarly, they have very small number of businesses that were accepting payments online, and it's again going to be in millions, right?
I love it. I love this answer, okay? I love it that instead of asking what's the market size, you need to ask yourself, is there going to be a future where this can be big enough?
Yeah.
Or is there going to be a future? And then the first question you ask yourself is this a problem for a lot of people as well? Second, is there a future when with this solution existing, there's going to be life as well?
Yeah.
And then the third question you ask is like, am I ready to build this future? Am I ready to commit?
Yeah.
That until this future becomes a reality, I'm going to keep building it.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, that part around future is what we call vision, right? And, you know, that's what entrepreneurs literally are supposed to bring that vision to life, because nobody knows what that future looks like. And if you tell to people, most of the folks, they'll think you are crazy or they'll not get you. And that's completely okay, right? And that is why that commitment step is a very significant, important step, you know, because it's a little bit of a leap of faith, right? You don't have a proof that this future can be real, right? You only have conjectures or, you know, an intuition, right? And this is the place where you really back yourself to say, yes, I can do this, right? And yes, I give myself permission to fail, because, you know, most likely you might fail, right? But, you know, the way I think about it is like, you know, if you really can't lose sleep over a certain problem, and if you don't commit, then at some point in your life, you are absolutely going to regret it. I've never met one founder, who's like, I regret taking this step, right? And see, you can think of a certain, you know, kind of thing when taking that leap of faith. Usually, like, you know, at least you have some financial security for, you know, next couple of years is what I would say, right? Because I think 2 years is a good timeline to try out something new, solve for something. If you look at a time scale of 3 to 6 months, I think it's very short, right? So if you have some sort of financial security, right? Or if you know that you will be able to give enough time, right? Because you know, if, I don't like, you know, depends on different people, right? But if you're getting married, or, you know, if you're just having a baby, like, you know, obviously you can still build an organization, and people do. They're great, right? But you might take a step back and say, like, you know, will I be able to focus on this without distractions, right?
Yeah.
So, and the commitment step is also important, because, you know, a lot of people leave their jobs, right? Like, for me, you know, I left my life in US, like the whole life that I built.
Driving the Mustang, you left that.
Yeah. Yeah, that and multiple other things, right? To come back to Jaipur of all places, not Bangalore. Jaipur, because my co-founder was from Jaipur, and we thought, like, you know, our monthly spends will be really low. And I was in Seattle, where the temperature used to be like, you know, 10 degrees at that point of time. And I came to Jaipur, where the temperature used to be 45 degrees Celsius. I was literally like, you know, okay, I'll burn off here. Like, that's how the first week was, right? There were electricity cuts, right? I would travel, with my with Harshal on a motorcycle on, you know, not
did you think
really
of it at that time? Did you be like, yaar kaha gaya yaar, kyun aa gaya? Like, were there any points you thought about it?
Interestingly, no. You know, there was no point where that thought came into my. Harshal used to tease me a lot, because he was like, I don't know why you have come here, right? I mean, we would have this banter going on, like, you know, he's like, like, who leaves, like, you know, that kind of life to come back to India, right? But, you know, as I said, right, I mean, there's a time for luxury, for enjoying, and that's fine. But, you know, I like solving problems, right? I like creating impact, right? And I think that professional satisfaction is, like, extremely, extremely important. I felt like I'm doing something new, right? I'm learning something new, because, you know, I've been a technical person, right? An engineer. I've prepared for engineering. I qualified engineering. Then I became an engineer, right? And worked on that. But there's something new. I started doing sales. I started talking to banks, right? Skill sets which I would never imagine. But I felt really good doing about it, even if that didn't lead anywhere for a very long time.
Quick question. How long did you work at the US?
About a couple of years.
Couple of years. Like, you were there for more than 2-3 years?
Not 3 years, no.
Okay.
Close to 2 years. Yeah.
Okay.
Like, about 9 years.
And do you drive a car here as well now?
Not really. Like, you know, mostly.
No, no.
Mostly,
no.
You know, I take cabs, right? Ola, Uber, and that.
No Ford Mustang here.
I think it's more about Bangalore traffic, I guess.
All right. So, what's the next step now? So we found out step one, step two. Now what's like, now the problem is done. I'm ready to commit. I know that it's a big enough problem. And in future, I imagine that this, I can see that this is going to become a mainstream thing. So what's the next? What should I do now? Like, so do I do?
I kind of think like, you know, depends on the domain, right? There are some domains which have very long gestation period, but most of the domains, right, which are internet in first in nature, usually have very short gestation period. Like you can launch a product in 3 months, 6 months, might even take a year. That's
how long
okay.
did it take you to launch your product?
It took us about, you know, 1 year.
In that year, you were just coding and building the product, or were you talking to banks? Were you talking, like, what were you doing?
No, so I think the coding was not an issue, you know, because that's an expertise, right? Yeah. Like, that's what we know, right? So we can code and launch products overnight, right? It was mostly talking to banks, understanding the domain, you know, getting compliances done. And we had a lot of funny stories doing that. And we actually tried and went out and tried to sell the product even before we had it, you know. Okay. So in Jaipur, we thought, okay, let's go out and sell like payment system to schools and colleges. And, you know, and we'd go to a college and we're like, okay, I want to talk to the principal. And they're like, have you come here for admission? So and that happened like 3 or 4 times. You're like, okay. Like, obviously, nobody is going to buy from people who they think are going to come.
College graduates, yeah.
Attend college, right? But, you know, because we kind of understood like it's going to take some time to launch the product, right? I mean, talking to banks also was very difficult. We'd go talk to banks in t-shirts, you know, and they're like, they'll throw us out. I don't know what a payment gateway is, right? So, you know, slowly we started wearing shirts. Then when we went to meet like a, you know, a payments head in a bank in Delhi, you know, Harshal actually bought a coat for the first time, a blazer, and prepared a proper business plan and, you know, went there to talk to him, right? But yeah, but the next step I would say is just to, you know, figure out how you can launch the product and get to a small number of customers. It could be 10 customers, 100 customers, 1,000 customers, depending on whatever the product is, right? Like if it's a B2B product, even getting like 10 customers is really good, right? If it's a B2C product, just get 1,000 customers, right? But I think that's what it is. Like, you know, see how you can start building the product, launch it, and, you know, get.
So how now let's say you missed out like a huge part here, okay? Who was your first 10 customers I want to go to? Who was your first customer?
Okay. So,
and how did you get them?
So for us, you know, I think we tried selling it to schools and colleges a lot. And some of them did commit as well. But it was a very painful journey. Like, you know, for 3-4 months, you know, I traveled with Harshal to every single school and college in Jaipur. And absolutely zero conversion. You know, absolutely zero. We were like, we don't know what we are doing, you know. And we had a lot of funny conversations. So the one time, you know, we tried to... First, we were trying to, you know, sell to people who were running schools, like principals and, you know, vice chancellor. And then we figured out like, okay, these are people who run schools, but they are not the ones who make decisions. You know, usually these schools are run by trustees or something. Yeah. So then we went to talk to, you know, a couple of folks in that, in trustees. And they're like, okay, like, you know, how much will you pay me to put this solution? And like, wait, like, you know, you are supposed to pay me to buy this. Like, we are not going to pay you, right? So then they're like, but I don't want to pay, right? I mean, you know, this product is going to help students or parents. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, then, you know, we'll ask the parents to pay for every digital transaction, right? So, like, so the person was like, okay, how much do you think the parent will pay, right? Mm-hmm. But like, you know, you have like, you know, people... travel across cities, you know, you have to pay a lot of cash, right? And write checks, right? And go out in sun over scooter, petrol, all those things, right? So we're like, look, we will charge like, you know, 0.5% or 1% for the payment of whatever is there, like, you know, 5,000, 10,000 rupees. And that will be sufficient. So like, if you think the parents are okay to pay 1% more, then why don't I increase my fees by 1% instead of giving it to you guys? Like, you know, I'll make more money. Because the simple thing is the parents are going to pay that money, even if it's a lot of hardship, you know. And we were very sad by that conversation. We are like, okay, it really broke our heart. Thankfully, not our spirit. So we're like, okay, this is done. You know, we are not going to
school. Schools and colleges are done now.
Yeah. But in parallel, what was happening, which was interesting, you know, and which is what our original thesis also was, that, you know, we were working out of a co-working space in Jaipur, the startup Oasis, you know, and there were like a bunch of entrepreneurs there. They are like, you know, almost like 30, 40 companies working out of there. And the entrepreneurs nearby us, right, the co-founders there, they are like, boss, we need a payment gateway. And they would just come and talk to us and then sign up, you know. And that was a very interesting thing. Because when we started, we obviously wanted to work for, sell to businesses and startups. But somewhere in the middle, we were like, you know, schools will mean a lot more money.
Yeah.
Okay. Because every school has like, you know, 1,000 students. Every college has like few thousand students. So if we crack one school, that is like equivalent to, I don't know how many small businesses, yes. Right? A lot of transactions and that's it. Like we'll be sorted, right? We'll be profitable. But obviously that was wrong, right? And in parallel, what happened in our co-working space, you know, we saw these companies which are working and we were like, you know, why don't you start accepting payments digitally, right? Why do it via bank transfer or via cash the way you are doing? This is more efficient, right? It'll save cost. And we started signing customers there just like that, you know. And we started hitting. And so the initial few customers, like initial couple of customers were just, you know, our friends in that place. We're like, okay, we'll take payments gateway from you. And we would obviously give them like a white glove service, do everything for them, even the integration for them. We were like, boss, just go live, start accepting payments and, you know, we'll be like.
And really, so now these were your friends and family and people who were around you. Who was the first big ticket you got? Like the first big startup or the first big company, if you remember, or the initial two or three, if you can remember.
So I think we served a lot of business. So, you know, I don't know how you define big. See, you know, there was a time in 2015 when...
So I tell you, maybe this will help you out to... I'll frame it better. What I'm trying to get is, how did you get that big client or somebody who you had to like a pitch, give like a proper pitch, and what did you tell them so that they got convinced and started integrating your payment gateway in their services or their use.
I think what you mean is like someone who is a brand.
Yeah, right? Who is like a brand. Like how did you crack a big brand? Because this is a problem with a lot of startup owners and a lot of small businesses, right? That now that I have a startup, I have my first 100 customers. I have my 1,000 customers as well. But I don't have that one guy who can like, who's like a big brand that will give me a big itch or the big boost in the startup system or in the
honestly, company. I think our first big brand happened close to like 2015, you know, some end or something, right? It was a very long journey. So I don't know if, you know, anchoring around a big brand is, you know, to really that important.
Okay.
Okay. Like what I would in fact say is, you know, figure out a channel that will work for you. Okay. Figure out a channel that is, you know, a sales or a marketing or whatever that is repeatable in nature.
Okay. Okay. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. So, when we started selling, right, obviously, like, you know, the co-working space is only like few entrepreneurs and that works, right? Then we're like, okay, how do we spread the word out, you know? Now, the interesting thing is, and for that product, for that time, you know, the incumbents were really focused on enterprises, right? Because that's where the big money and the big volume is, right? So, what we did, you know, and this was not planned, but, you know, sort of semi-planned, semi-intuitive, right? There are a bunch of startup groups in the country, bunch of startup WhatsApp groups, Facebook groups, right? There's like a Bangalore startup group, Jaipur startup group, Delhi startup group. So every city, tier one, tier two city has its own WhatsApp and Facebook groups. So this is how it started. We were like, okay, this is working in co-working space. Where do other founders hang out, right? And we'd go to these Facebook groups and we'll just post, hey, we are looking for a payment gateway. We have launched a payment gateway. If anyone is looking for it, you know, you can just, you know, ping us and we'll give you like very good service, help you launch immediately, right? And we started getting inquiries through that, right? There was a lot of misinformation or there was a lot of lack of information that was presented on payments, right? And that's the way like our initial word spread out, you know, in the country, which was mostly grassroots level through these startup groups, right? And we would give really good service to these founders. You know, we're like, okay, like what we'll do everything we want to just help you succeed, right? And because they really liked it, they would go and tell two, three other people, right? And that's word of mouth, I think is extremely important. Kind of feel like, unless your product is really good, unless your word of mouth is really strong, you should not scale large, you know.
Interesting.
So today, you know, if you compare it to today, right? That channel is kind of over for us, because if in any Facebook group anyone posts today, like, I want a payment gateway, you'll have a representative from every payment gateway company going and applying there, like, you know, this RazorPay, this is our competition, like, you know, everything, like, they will reply PayU, Paytm, all that, right? So that channel no longer works for us, right? But that time, it was completely untapped, it was completely new, and it gave us great returns, you know, for almost like, you know, a couple of years at that point, right? So what I'm saying is, yeah, it doesn't matter to get your first big brand, because that will obviously give you a boost, but it's not repeatable in nature, right? Find a way, some sales or marketing strategy that starts working, that starts giving you results, and then, you know, you can replicate it and start scaling it in some ways.
It's a great insight, because this is what happened. Most of us, we fuss about finding that big guy or like big brand or somebody who can pay us a lot. But after we get that, it takes a long time to get to that person or that brand. Yeah. Okay, so we anyway waste like a lot of time for that. And then B, once we get that, we can't repeat it again.
Yep.
It's very difficult to do it.
Yeah.
So it makes a lot of sense to, instead of finding that one big guy, we should find out a way which is repeatable again and again to get the sales in nature.
Yes.
That's absolutely a very good step. And I think you need somebody to tell you this. it's common sense, but still, like, a lot of people don't focus on this particular stuff.
Yeah. I tell founders every time that, you know, just focus on, you know, your week-on-week growth, right? Like, week-on-week, you should start growing 10%, 20%, whatever, right? Like, as long as, you know, because as companies mature, scale, you know, they start looking at quarters, years, which is fine, right? But when you are a young startup, you need to survive week to week.
Yeah.
That's it, right? You need to worry about, like, 2 years later, what is going to happen, right? You're simply thinking, like, okay, boss man, agli week ka numbers kahan se aa rahe, agli week ka customers kahan se aa rahe. Am I well prepared to serve them, right? If I know, like, I'm getting 5 customers next week, can I get 10 customers next week, right? That's all you have to think and solve for and keep, you know, working towards in the initial months. And as long as you can find that repeatable playbook, I think it will serve you really well in the time.
You kind of answered the next question already. I was going to ask you this question only. Like, now, how do we go about growth? Like, now that I've figured out first sales and now I have to grow it, and what should be my mindset when it comes to growth? You're like, okay, just focus on a week.
Yeah.
Every week, you come up with week to week to week. Do you guys still think of week, or now you have like a year plans or quarter plans?
We obviously now have, like, you know, 3-4 year plans, yearly plans. But any new initiative that we do, right? I mean, tell the people there that the, you know, whoever is running it, to track it week to week, to track it day to day, like, you know, what's kind of going on. And do anything that you can, right, to get on top of that week. Because, you know, a lot of startups, especially high growth startups, right, work on momentum.
Yeah.
You know, so you want to continue creating momentum in a way, right? And I'll tell you, like, you know, when we used to call founders, right, sometimes we were like, okay, like, you know, this guy hasn't picked up. So, you know, we started calling from a number in US, you know, just so that people will pick up. Because we were like, okay, if people pick up the call, then we can convince them about our product, right? You know, we would find ways to, you know, get this thing that, okay, look, you know, if you're not accepting payments right now, but whenever you do, right, how can we create that association that whenever you do first, it's you know, internet is huge. Whenever you do, you come to RazorPay, right?
Mm.
So just to hit that, like, okay, I want to get, you know, 5 customers this week. I want to get 10 customers this week. We'll do everything we can to just, you know, make it happen and come out on top of it. And slowly that, you know, that just becomes a habit.
That does. Now, what do you think is the top 3 or 4 things which any startup founder should keep in mind? Or what are the most important things which a startup founder should keep in mind once they have their startup, they have their product, and they started selling? Now they're growing. So what are the most 2-3 important things which they should figure out? Or the top 3 things according to you which every startup founder should look at? Maybe week-on-week numbers, what is it?
Okay, so, you know, see, the simple thing is, like, when you start growing, I think you have to be on top of your week-on-week numbers. Like,
okay,
there's absolutely nothing more important than that, just from a growth
perspective. If you're talking about from the growth perspective only. So that's the first thing.
Yeah.
What are the other two?
Yeah. Second would be, just thinking like, if you are able to grow to, that you can hire people, think about, hire really good people who can replace you, right? As simple as that. Like, you are doing a job that is working, get someone else to do it so that you can go out and do something else, right? And that guy can now make it better. You don't need to sort of focus on it, right?
Okay.
And see, there'll be tons of things, right? So for us, for us, like, we have to do sales, right? And we got our friend who is really good, at talking to people, not at selling, just talking to people. We are like, he knows how to talk to people. He'll figure out the rest of the stuff. That is right. We got another friend who is really good at analytics. Okay. So you're like, okay, he'll figure out the operations. He'll figure out everything, like, because operations works in that sense, right? So, he'll manage that part, right? Coding is something like, product building is something that's really important. So we're like, okay, like, we can't continue building this ourselves. We are, we should get people who are expert in that, and, they can manage that. Another thing is like when hiring people, I think it's really important to hire the initial set, like, really good people whom you think you can work with long term. Because if you are able to build the core of the team, right, the initial 5 to 10 members were really well sorted, right? And are aligned with you, are culturally strong, and what I like to call like a really good generalist who can do anything to everything, that helps you the company set up long term for success, right?
So finding your core team is the what's the third part?
I think the third part aspect, that I would say should keep in mind is like, just a semblance of it in some sense is the aspect around culture. For a lot of organizations, like, I think culture is something that serves you really well long term. You don't want to do wrong by your customers, by your, people, anyone who you are associated with, right? You obviously want to grow, but you should not do any things, which will create wrong precedent in the organization or sort of wrong steps in the organization, right? So culture is something that, over a period of years becomes a really good strategic advantage, right? So as you continue scaling, you want to make sure that, the company is set up in the right way, right? That's it. Like these three things, that's what, I would call.
Week on week, hiring the right people, the initial core team, and then the setting the right culture so that core team themselves can expand on the cultural principles which you have set in your company, right? I'll tell you, so week on week, mujhe ek cheez yaad aa gayi. When I was in my factory, okay, and initially when I was working, I figured out my initial set of customers and we were selling. And first time, I got like a huge order. And that in that huge order, it was the first time when there was a truckload of goods which were going out. The entire truck was getting loaded up. And then every week, instead of week on week, we used to talk about truck by truck. Okay. Like, how many trucks are going to be there at my factory premises today? Like every day, this was our conversation. This is what I was talking to my team, my friends and everybody. Okay, now I want more trucks. Because earlier we used to send our detergents and dishwash gels and everything through taxis, small taxis.
Wow.
Because we would just distribute it to small places, right? And now there are trucks going
like
on.
A magnitude growth from a taxi to a truck.
So I saw that for the first time. And this is what, instead of week on week, the entire growth, I was not caring about numbers. I was not caring about what's going on. I was like, how many trucks? The number of trucks I want to know. I don't know about the revenue.
but see, that's really interesting. So, thing to think through is, right, what is a North Star for you, right? Like, what is a North Star that you're chasing in terms of business metrics, right? For us, it was number of customers, or for us, it was like, the transactions that these businesses were doing, right? If you can set a good North Star, it anchors the whole company around it, right?
Yeah.
If you're very fuzzy in articulating like, what are you trying to do and what is the North Star you have, then your team members will also not know like, what they're working towards, and they'll run in different directions, right?
Mm.
So that is why, like, when you're in the initial stages, like, what matters to you, clearly calling it out, look, this is our North Star, right? And this is what we should be doing. That's absolutely like, everyone will just double down on it. Like,
absolutely. And I think the culture also once you set this is our North Star and you start telling people, that automatically becomes like a culture or a blood of your company, and that it helps out. So with the truck story only, after we started growing and we were like, every 10th truck which is going to be there, everybody in the office starts clapping.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So now it became like a race. Okay, like once the 8th truck or the 9th truck was there, everybody was just waiting corner because everybody wanted to become the first one to start celebrating. And that pumped people so much because that guy who saw the 10th truck for the first time or the number of, like, who got the data, okay, and he started clapping, he would work really hard to get to another 10th because he always wants to be the first one to tell about, oh, this is my 10th truck or this is my thing. So it helped us build a culture of growth where everybody was celebrating the 10 trucks as well.
Perfect.
Yes. So this makes sense.
I think for us, you know, one thing that really worked well, again, was, you know, we wanted everyone to handle customer support.
Okay.
So you know, the general mindset is like, you know, customer support is something that others are supposed to do, right? You hire folks for doing customer support, right? We were like, no, we want everyone to do customer support so that they see what are the pain points of a customer, right? Why? First of all, like, you know, they shouldn't need to come to us for support, right? They
should
just go to the product, the product should work. But it never is, right? It absolutely never is. There's something or the other keeps breaking, something or the other that is an issue. And we are in the business of money, right? So just anchoring on that. Everyone, people go out and do customer support for 2-3 hours and come back, they are like, boss, like, we have so much work to do. Well, there's so much we can do. There's so much problems out there, and you know, we have so much and that, you know, used to create a very good this thing that like we are really solving a good problem, right? So,
but that's a really good thing, right? I think every startup should do that, because the moment they come to you, you're like, oh, I have a lot of work to do, that's why I can't handle customer support. Like, yeah. You should make a better product so that customer support doesn't take a lot of your time.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's like you're making them get into a loop. It's a good thing. Now, okay, you also went to YC, right? That was your first big move, which I would say. What do you think was the reason why YC took you in? Or why YC gave you a chance? What was that reason?
I think in hindsight, it's pretty obvious, right? I mean, India is going to be a huge market, and payments is something that obviously, like, you know, is a significant important infrastructure for any country, mm-hmm. right? And you know, in India, payments is not a solved problem. So I think the combination of these parts, and obviously, like, hopefully they saw something good in
What did they see in you? That's what I want to know. That's what I want to see. What did they see you in Harshal? Like, yaar, ye hi dono kar sakte payment wala tha.
Yeah, that I honestly don't know.
You'll have but what to do you ask think? Him, what is the reason? What do you think? If you self-analyze, or if you think about something, okay, this is my strength, or maybe they saw this.
See, the way YC interviews, right? It's a very short 10-minute interview. That's it. That's it. 10 minutes. Okay. You know, a lot of people, you know, have criticized or even asked, like, how can you judge anything in 10 minutes? Yeah. To be honest, right? But I think it's more than sufficient, you know. I think the way it sort of works is that, you know, they obviously know a lot more about different domains.
Yep.
And different companies that have come and gone, right? And they ask you a bunch of questions, right? I think what they look for is that, you know, whether you are able to answer certain questions, or you have the confidence to give, you know, some thought through answers to the questions, right? Because if they can ask a question which does not make sense, you know, from their perspective, like, you know, you have not thought of them and they have thought more about it in 10 minutes, then obviously it becomes a red flag. I think the other thing I kind of think is that, you know, they look for, like, you know, whether you're able to progress on your own, right? And get from point A to point B, because entrepreneurship is difficult, right? They are not there to support you to, you know, do things, right? I mean, you know, it's not a school, right? They're not supposed to take any test or anything, right? So I think they're just looking for, like, whether you're motivated to continue doing this on your own as much as possible. I think we had gone to almost, like, after 8-9 months to YC, and, you know, we had got this support from the banks and all. So obviously, like, you know, there was enough proof points to say, like, you know, we have crossed some milestones.
So that was, this is where you feel like you were well prepared. That's what got you in.
I don't know if it was well prepared. Like, I think.
Oh, you were well prepared for the 10-minute question and answer round.
Yeah, I think that's kind of, like, you know, I think we were well prepared for what we were doing, the domain, right? And that's just reflected in the in that 10-minute conversation.
And has anything, let's say, the vision point or the problem you're trying to solve or something which you pitched back then, has it changed right now? Now is much evolved version of your vision, or is it the same?
It's pretty much the same. It's just, you know, expanded is okay. How I would call it. When we started, we were like, you know, we want to solve payments that's there, right? And we have made a lot of progress on payments in the last 5-6 years. But now you see that, you know, for a business, right, their financial journey is broken in a lot of places, not just payments, right? The way you manage payroll, the way you do your taxes, the way, you know, you make payments to your vendor, the way, you know, you get a loan, for example, or, you know, you raise funding, right? All of these have like a lot of things that are broken. You ask any entrepreneur, you know, when you go for a payroll, like, you know, or when you file your taxes, what do you like about it?
Yeah.
And nobody will tell you like they like that, right? Because it's a huge pain. I had a story that my co-founder Harshal was on a vacation in Goa. And at the middle of the night, the finance team called him, "Sir, you have to approve payroll. You have to make, put in some OTP, and that he can only do on his own laptop." And in the middle of the vacation in Goa, whatever party he was in, like, he had to come out, take out his laptop and, you know, key that in the OTP and make it happen, right? And find some patchy internet that is working, right? So the same problem that is there in payments, right? We want to simplify the financial life of an entrepreneur, of a business, and take away all the problems there, right? And hopefully in that journey, help them digitize, help them leverage technology more, simplify their, you know, lives as much as possible.
Right? Okay. So before I go to the last two questions, okay, I want to ask you, do you guys still do the OTP thing? Do you still get OTPs? This is a pain point I'm facing. So I want to know, like, even after having a unicorn, do you face this?
So yes and no.
Yes and no.
There are a lot of areas where we still do.
Okay.
You know, but there are a lot of places where I've built really good products that, you know, solve the pain point, right?
Okay.
So, for example, payroll, for example, right? Instead of, you know, so in payroll itself, you do the payroll for your employees, you file your compliances, all of that, right? So, usually that process might take like 9 to 10 OTPs and, you know, a lot of your time. Now that become like a single click process for us. Okay. And recently we launched something cool. You'd like it. Like, you know, you can even approve the transaction on your Apple Watch. That is there, right?
So, without an OTP, I can just get a notification and be like...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, you just get like, okay, like, you know, approve payroll. You just click on it and you just tap on it and touch it and that's it. It's done.
Sweet. Right? Oh, that's good. I think we need it. I need it because there's my accountant calling me up, "Sir, iska OTP de do, ye kar raha hai. Sir, iska OTP de do." And it's a problem. Okay, so the last second question I want to ask you, what do you feel are the top three things which are important for an entrepreneur or a startup founder which is outside the organization? Let's say some people say networking is important. Some people say having a work-life balance is important, or whatever, reading is important. What do you think?
I think the most important thing is customers, you know, talking to customers, knowing the customers, right? That's what will anchor the organization in a very strong way. You know, I think a lot of startup founders forget talking to customers at a certain point, you know, in the early days itself, right? Because they get so busy in building the product that they forget, like, you know, they're building it for someone, you know, and so many people have commit this mistake. Even large organizations, you know, like I remember this anecdote by Google Plus, which was there something 10 years ago. You know, the person who designed Google Plus, they called out that, you know, we were so busy in designing a beautiful product that we forget talking to customers. So even a large organization makes that mistake. And especially engineers are really, you know, because they love building the product so much that they forget that, you know, they're building it for a customer and they may want something radically different than the way you're building, right? I think customers is I think, the biggest important thing in that sense, right? Other thing, if I have to say, I would say is, you know, your own mental health, in a way. You should manage it well, you know. I think you are the best person to figure that out, you know. It might come through, you know, playing sports, it might come through talking to other people, right? It might come through just being around with your family. For some people, it might just be like, you know, I just want to work more, right? Like, you know, there's like Elon Musk, which just believes in working 24/7, right? So, which is obviously not healthy for everyone,
yeah.
Right? But you have to find your own thing that, you know, that keeps you centered, that keeps you sane, that keeps you peaceful. Because entrepreneurship is a very long journey. Right? It's a huge marathon. It's not a 100-meter sprint. It's like a, you know, a combination of marathons over the years. Is there, right? So you have to find ways.
What do you do? What do you do to cope up with this? Do you play any sport? Do you play guitar? What do you do?
I read a lot. You know, I used to play piano earlier, like a few years back, but you know, I mostly stopped. I play a lot of table tennis. Like I have a table tennis table at my home.
I have a table tennis table at my home. Next time we're in Mumbai, we're challenging. We're doing amazing. A game now.
yeah, done, right? So, you know, people keep coming to our house for, you know, for whatever parties or you know, just visits. And I would play table tennis with all of them. And, you know, that just makes me happy, right? So, you know, and I love talking to people. I love talking to a lot of entrepreneurs. So every Saturday, I would go and meet, you know, entrepreneurs and just talk to them. And at least till we became a unicorn, you know, it used to be very positive conversation. After becoming a unicorn, it's become a little bit difficult because, you know, people are like, okay, I want your advice and stuff like that, right? So it's no longer like a good two-way conversation. But I love talking to people that way, right? So even today, I talk to other founders and other execs and, you know, people in the ecosystem. And it just makes me really happy and motivated.
Perfect. And the third thing? What was the third thing now?
You're really fan of like asking three questions.
I love rule of three, okay? Like I love three things.
External to the company, I would say like, you know, in some sort of in networking, but you know, I'm not a big fan of the term networking in itself, you know, because it sounds a bit meaningless, right?
Yep.
I think what could be good is that, you know, you talk to people and you try and learn from their experiences, okay? Because, you know, we are human beings, we don't know everything, and we'll obviously make a lot of mistakes, right? If you can find people in your journey who can mentor you or who can share their experiences with you, right? It'll help prevent a lot of mistakes that you can commit, right?
Yeah.
And there would be days where I'm like, ki, yaar, matlab, samajh nahi aa raha, kya karu? Like, what I have to do? Like, so how should I get a brand or should I, you know, raise funding, right? And, you know, how should I get, you know, my first employee, right? So I think, you know, I think YC really helped play that role for us. But even outside of that, like, I think we met a lot of people. Kunal Shah, you know, has been like a really good mentor for us. And he would always come up with crazy ideas on, you know, how you can do things, right? So I think purpose-oriented networking, right? Which is, you know, you are able to learn something new every time you meet someone, right? And some of them become your friends, some of them can become your mentors, some of them can become your investors, some of them can just be your cheerleaders for you, right? It just helps you improve yourself by leaps and bounds in various ways, like, you know, unintentionally, because, you know, when I was in Bay Area, right, I would have met like almost close to like, you know, 100, 150 people in that ecosystem. And similarly, when I came to Bangalore, every weekend I would meet people. You know, my storytelling improved, my ability to talk to people improved. And I'm a huge introvert. You know, I like my space at the end of the day. Like every day I go back home, I want to spend a couple of hours by myself, right? So even for me, it was not very easy, you know, to come out of that shell and to speak to people. But, you know, I figured out my own formula of doing that, right? And now whenever I face a problem, I have a great network, right, of people whom I can reach out to, and I know exactly whom to reach out to, who can be helpful to me.
For a specific thing. Yeah. Here's a good one, okay? I'd say this to my friends or people who ask me this, that how do we go about networking? It's like, try to find out either like-minded people or people you admire with, but find out with this objective that you either have to have fun with them or learn something from them. If you can't figure out both any of them or both of them, stop seeking out or looking out for people.
Yeah.
Because it makes no sense. Because if you can't figure out a way to, let's say, have fun with you while playing a TT or something, I should not even talk to you. Or if there's not a way where I can do a podcast with you and learn something from your journey, then what's the point of me reaching out to you, right? Yeah. So this is what people need to figure out when they're trying to network with a lot of people.
Yeah.
Now, the last question, and then I'm going to summarize everything. It's a quick one, okay? And the quick one is, if you were not building this startup, the RazorPay, or in the fintech industry, what do you think, where is the next $1 billion opportunity for entrepreneurs in the country?
See, I'll tell you one thing, right? You know, there's no one place where you can build $1 billion.
What would you be building? Or what do you think is your real, what do you think you would be doing if not fintech?
So, honestly, you know, I have thought of this before, because you know, at some point I was like, okay, like, you know, if RazorPay didn't work out, like, you know. So I can think of two things. One is that, you know, I might be working on the idea that I was initially working on, which is, you know, how can I create a future where, you know, everyone believes that they should donate a part of their
giving
income, right? And give it to causes that they are passionate about, that they think a lot about, and make it very easy. You know, you just go there, you sign up for a cause, and you can contribute your time, your money, anything, you know.
Like SIP for causes.
Absolutely. Perfect. Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is, like, you know, what I feel, right? And, you know, I've obviously donated before. It makes you feel really good. Really good.
Yeah.
You know? So it's not something that's without an aim as well, right? So I might be doing that, honestly. If not that, then I think second could be, like, you know, I might be doing something in, you know, in the decentralized finance space, in the crypto space. That is there. I love that technology. You know, there's a lot of noise around it, right? Everyone is like, okay, crypto investments, this, that, but the underlying technology there, right? It's revolutionary in the sense that, you know, I feel like it is at a place where internet was, you know, in the early 90s. Key thing being that it's still early 90s from a crypto perspective. So there's still like a three decade journey ahead in that ecosystem. And, you know, it's just starting to take off. So only thing is there's a lot of noise right now in it. But you can do a lot of good things,
there. Sweet. Thanks a lot for doing this. Let me try to summarize it for people, okay? Number one, if you want to become friends with Shashank and want his advice, stop asking for advices. Go learn how to play TT and have fun with him. That's the
I'll bite at that.
That's the first thing. But apart from that, we figured out, first is you find out a problem to solve. Then you find out whether you're ready to commit and ready to be there till the time it becomes the real reality or no, that you have to figure out. Then you find out your first set of customers to launch and find out your initial set of problems. Then you focus on week growth, hiring the right people so that you can get off their place. And then you can start taking care of your mental health as well, because it's a long journey. And if you want everything else which we just talked about in detail, you need to listen to the podcast again.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot for being here, man. Thanks a lot. It was fun conversation.
Thanks a lot, Raj. Really nice talking to you. You know, definitely enjoyed our conversation. And yeah, hope people take something good out of it.